This is an iHeart podcast.
You want smart political talk without the meltdowns? We got you.
And I'm Carol Markowitz.
And I'm Mary Catherine Hamm. We've been around the block in media, and we're doing things differently.
Normally is about real conversations. Thoughtful, try to be funny, grounded, and no panic.
We'll keep you informed and entertained without ruining your day.
Join us every Tuesday and Thursday.
Normally, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
There are big stories today. We're not talking about the eclipse. We'll get to those. We'll talk about China. We have a panel here to discuss the 2024 issues. Anti-white racism more. Come on up now. We live in unique times. And I know, you know, there's nothing new under the sun. We know that old saying, but part of what makes these times so unique, so different than really anything anyone's had to deal with, is the abundance of information. Information, news stories, video links, audio links, things you can read. Think about this. Just stay with me. We're going somewhere. This is going to come to today and the big stories and everything else and whatnot. Think about this. If you lived, not even in ancient times, in 1950, that's not that long ago. There are people watching right now who lived in the 1950s. In the 1950s, how many sources did you have to get the news of the day, let's say? How many? No internet. No. You probably didn't even have a television in your house. If you did, there was one channel, two channels, okay, maybe one news program on that night. Some guy comes on for a half hour. You'll have the local newspaper, of course, maybe a national newspaper, but okay, so you, max three sources? Max? That's probably being generous. Max three sources? Well, it's the year 2024. How many ways do I have to access information? How many different avenues? I could stop the show right now. I could pick up my phone and I could get the news of the day, the different perspectives on the news of the day, audio, video, right here on my phone. And it would take me all day, and I still couldn't touch a fraction of the news websites out there, news channels out there to get the news. Okay, so you get what I'm saying. Endless amounts of information we can consume. And there are many benefits from this, and there are many drawbacks from this. Let's set the benefits aside for our purposes tonight. Let's talk about the drawbacks. One of the major drawbacks, it's this. When there is a story, a scandal, it will burn bright. Really, really bright right when the scandal drops. That's a good thing. So something bad happens, someone does something bad, a politician, whatever, they do something bad, man, the heat's gonna be on them for about 24 hours. You're talking about it, I'm talking about it, it's on every news site, everyone's tweeting about it. Ah. But then there's so much information that really no matter what happens, we'll talk about something different the next day. And not only will we move on the next day, we'll never come back to it, ever. Really, if you get in trouble, just hunker down for about 24 hours. We'll never come back to it, because then the next day there's a new story, the next day it's a new story. And so the challenge you face, the challenge I face every single day, we go through this here on the first, when we're putting together our show for you on I'm Right every day. Me, Matt, John, the boys, we're trying to figure out, what do we tell you? What do we not tell you? What do we want to talk about tonight? Well, what's the real news versus what's noise? I know the eclipse is news today, and I'm not bad-mouthing the eclipse. I hope you enjoyed watching the eclipse. Not my thing. Kind of wish it was, though. Hope you had a good time. It is cool. Okay. But that's the big story. Or a big fundraising weekend for Trump. It's a big fundraising weekend. The Middle East. Israel. Let's talk about Ukraine. But let's talk about something different, shall we? Just, this is going to come to modern day, so stay with me. Do you remember this particular narrative during COVID?
In the schools, everybody should wear a mask.
And asking kids to wear a mask is uncomfortable, but you know, kids are pretty resilient.
Kids are resilient.
There's nothing adverse or bad about masks.
We've used masks for decades. We mask kids in our cancer wards routinely.
We have now a plethora of ongoing research and studies and documents that are showing us that masks do not put children at risk.
This concept that children somehow are harmed or abused by wearing masks is not founded in any science.
It's simple. It does no harm.
Those 50 million children need to protect themselves by wearing masks.
If I'm going to get on an airplane, I don't have to wear a mask, but I will have my kids wear one.
I don't think this is politically dividing at all. I wear masks. My kids wear masks.
I don't understand why parents are not listening to the science, not teaching their children to wear a mask.
Remember how hard they pushed to tell us that our children were at risk for coronavirus? And hold on, remember the fallout from that. Look, we haven't even come close to recovering as a nation. Our children, we'll just make it about the children for now, from what we did during COVID. The suicides with children through the roof. The COVID push, the COVID lockdowns, the wear a mask, the close your school. It caused children to kill themselves. Right now, there are parents across the country who don't have their baby anymore because of lockdowns, suicides, drug use, alcohol use, depression. We now know students are actually skipping school at a rate we've never seen before. The learning loss, staggering amounts of learning loss. And we're not even going to talk about the personal loss, the personal experiences. This is something that you don't hear about unless you have kids that age or close to that age. How many kids didn't get to walk their graduation, wear a gown, have a good time their senior year, take a senior trip somewhere? How many kids were denied life's little rites of passage because we were told over and over and over and over and over again that we have to be afraid, that our kids are in danger, we have to be afraid? Well, what happened today, while everyone was looking up at the eclipse, talking about Ukraine, what happened today, the Center for Disease Control just came out and they revised down their pediatric deaths from COVID-19 and they revised it down by 24%. They're calling it a coding logic error, which of course you know is a lie. The Center for Disease Control overinflated how deadly COVID was to children. We've destroyed a generation of children. And today, all anyone can talk about is the eclipse. Look, they lied about everything in the Center for Disease Control. They lied about the deadliness of the disease itself to everybody.
The new warning from the World Health Organization, the death rate from the coronavirus is rising.
3.4% is higher.
Twice as deadly as previous estimates.
3.4%. The state of emergency.
The World Health Organization says the coronavirus death rate is 3.4%.
President Trump lies that the World Health Organization is wrong.
The number is 3.4%.
3.4% is what it's being reported around the world.
The death rate.
The percentage is 3.4%. And no hunch from the president can change that.
Trump lied about the most recent World Health Organization estimate that the global death rate of coronavirus is 3.4%.
Dr. Jay Bhattacharya.
My hypothesis.
My hunch.
Was it was likely to be less deadly than the World Health Organization was saying.
3.4%.
There's no way that was true.
Really a false number.
This is why I ran the study in April of 2020.
And what did you discover?
The infection fatality rate was 0.2%.
3.4%. So we all have to shut down the country, destroy our economy, destroy our way of life. It was actually 0.2, but they all lied. And all these numbers are now coming out about how much they lied. But the real crime is nobody will care. We can't keep up. How do you keep up with all the scandals? After all, Jesse, that was so long ago, right? It's just a few years. But it was so long ago. Jesse, there have been way too many scandals. Anyway, catch that eclipse today? Beware of the narrative. Beware of the big story everyone's talking about in any given day, because there very likely are much, much, much more important stories and more nefarious stories lying right underneath. And do I need to remind everyone again that all of our way of life changed because of the idea that we had to lock down for a virus? Don't forget, by the way, the American Rescue Plan. Remember that one in 2021? The American Rescue Plan? $700,000 sent to swing states like Wisconsin for illegals. So while they were destroying the economy and shutting down the country, you were stroking taxpayer-funded checks, sending them to illegals when you weren't sending them to ballot boxes in Wisconsin also. All that may have made you uncomfortable, but I am right. We have a huge show for you tonight. We're going to talk about climate change. We're going to talk about climate change as it relates to China. Do you remember? You remember how many guests we've had on the show, how many times I've talked to you on the show about how we took our entire manufacturing sector in this country and we sent it to China? Remember, there's a reason the Rust Belt is called the Rust Belt. It used to be the manufacturing belt of the country. Then we took all those jobs and sent them to our mortal enemy. Yeah, we're going to talk about that, climate change, and more. Before we get to that, let's talk about Oxford Gold Group, because there's another thing that came from coronavirus, the printing of $6-7 trillion in unbacked currency. You want to know why grocery prices are up? We now have the numbers 40%+. Why you can't seem to afford the same amount of groceries you could before. You can't make ends meet. It's because we locked down the country. Oh, and by the way, that number is going to get worse. They're all admitting it now. No one's even pretending like it gets better. So what can a normal person do? You can get precious metals in your hands. Gold coins, silver coins, something in your hands that will allow you to protect yourself financially. Oxford Gold will not only get the coins in your hands, they'll get it in your retirement account, your IRA, your 401k. Call 833-995-GOLD and let Oxford handle it for you. 833-995-GOLD. We'll be back.
Hey there, I'm Mary Catherine Hamm.
And I'm Carol Markowitz. We've been in political media for a long time.
Long enough to know that it's gotten, well, a little insane.
That's why we started Normally, a podcast for people who are over the hysteria and just want clarity.
We talk about the issues that actually matter to the country without panic, without yelling, and with a healthy dose of humor.
We don't take ourselves too seriously, but we do take the truth seriously.
So if you're into common sense, sanity, and some occasional sass,
you're our kind of people.
Catch new episodes of Normally every Tuesday and Thursday
on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen.
During conversations this week, I underscored again that the United States does not seek to decouple from China. Our two economies are deeply integrated, and a wholesale separation would be disastrous for both of our economies. I've also been pleased by the progress we've made in conversations around sustainable finance, and I'm committed to moving our climate cooperation with China forward.
Okay, are we enemies or are we friends? I can never seem to figure this out. Every time these people talk, I can't figure out if we're enemies or friends. I know what I believe about it. I wonder what Stephen Mosier has to say. Joining me now, Stephen W. Mosier, author of the book, The Devil in Communist China. Stephen, is China our friend? Are they our enemy? Are we frenemies? What are we?
Well, let's start with what China thinks about us, because we should know the intentions of our enemies. And our enemies say that we have been at war, they have been at war with us since almost the founding of the People's Republic of China. Now, remember the Korean War, we were in an actual shooting war with them. Of course, we haven't been in a shooting war with China since then. We're not firing missiles or bullets at each other, but China is attacking us across all domains except the kinetic, no bullets, but fentanyl, 100,000 young Americans killed in the United States every year by an illicit drug, which comes originally from China. That's a form of chemical warfare. The release of COVID on the world, that killed a lot of Americans, didn't it? And it certainly disrupted our economy for a long time and set back President Trump's last year in office, perhaps cost him the election. The cyberspace, they've been at war with us in cyberspace since Well, since the beginning of the internet, for goodness sake, the theft of intellectual property continues apace, hundreds of billions of dollars a year stolen. There were, back in 1998, Chris Cox said to me, 8,000 Communist Party front groups in the United States, spying agencies. Now I think you can add a couple of zeros to that. So they're at war with, if your enemy's at war with you, then you're at war, whether you want to be or not.
Yeah, that's the enemy gets a call. Why does it seem like every American policy when it comes to this dangerous climate change we see out there, Stephen, why does every American policy to address man-made climate change, why does it end up making China richer? Man, if I was a conspiracy theorist, I'd almost put two and two together.
Well, and the solar panels are being made in eastern Turkestan, what the Chinese Communist Party calls Xinjiang, by slave labor. The Uyghurs have been forced into prison camps and forced into factories to make these solar panels in environmentally unsound conditions. I'm not a big fan of massive use of solar panels, but I'm even less a fan of the fact that China makes them using slave labor, subsidizes their export, and then sends them to the United States, paid for by U.S. government subsidies at taxpayer expense. That's a great business model for the Chinese Communist Party. It sure is a lousy way for the United States to do business, however. And the windmills, they come from China as well. We just stopped a project off the coast of New Jersey and New York, which is going to build giant windmills in the middle of the ocean, which would involve pouring hundreds of tons of concrete on the ocean floor and building steel towers up in a very corrosive environment, which probably would generate enough electricity for, you know, six homes on the beach. It's just ridiculous. But the guts for that came from China as well. So China takes full advantage of the foolishness of our politicians. And in fact, you know, and I know, that they're directly funding the radical environmental movement in the United States for precisely this reason, so they can gain an economic advantage over us.
Stephen, real quick, tell us about your book.
The book is called The Devil in Communist China. China is kind of the polar opposite of the United States in the sense that we were founded by honorable men who put their lives, their fortunes, their sacred honor on the line to create a country based on freedom of speech, assembly, association, and so forth. The Chinese Communist Party was founded by a leader, Mao Zedong, and his fellows, who did the opposite. They created a war machine that went to war first against the Chinese people, and then went to war against some of the rest of the world, and would like, of course, to continue that with an invasion of Taiwan. Mao himself was one of the most evil men who ever existed. If he didn't sell his soul to the devil, which he didn't believe in God or the devil, he might as well have, because every decision he made, he delighted in deceiving people, both within the Communist Party and outside the Communist Party. So one of the most evil men who ever existed. I spent several chapters talking about his sins against the Chinese people, his rebellion against his father, the killingest man in human history, 100 million deaths I attribute to him during the Chinese Civil War and later on during the Great Famine, the purges, the persecutions, the Cultural Revolution. The man just mowed down the Chinese people like so many sheaves of wheat. And when tens of millions of people were dying in the famine after the Great Leap Forward collectivization effort, the commune system that failed, tens of millions of people dying, Mao simply shrugged and said, deaths have benefits. Their bodies fertilize the soil. That's Chairman Mao for you. As the twig is bent, so the tree grows. The tree that was planted by Chairman Mao is twisted, bizarre, and hateful to this day.
Stephen, appreciate you very much, my man. Something to keep your eyes on. All right. Let's talk about culture issues. Trump made a statement on abortion today. Before we talk about that, let's talk about your personal defense. You see, there's an old saying, I don't know who came up with it first, but man, is it such a great saying, hope is not a plan. My kids are running out, my wife's running down to the store. Honey, are you ready if a bad man meets you in the parking lot, wants to hurt you? Well, I hope that doesn't happen. That's not a plan. Birna is a plan. Having a Birna pistol launcher. Now that's a plan. What is it? Well, it's non-lethal. So whether you love guns like I do or hate guns, doesn't matter. This is non-lethal. Shoots pepper balls or tear gas balls, whatever you want. Has a great holster, a million comfortable ways to carry it concealed, and it will stop a bad man in his tracks. This thing might save your life. Byrna.com/Jesse doesn't just save you money. It may save your life. BYRNA. Go get one for the person you love and yourself. We'll be back.
Hey there, I'm Mary Catherine Hamm.
And I'm Carol Markowitz. We've been in political media for a long time.
Long enough to know that it's gotten, well, a little insane.
That's why we started Normally, a podcast for people who are over the hysteria and just want clarity.
We talk about the issues that actually matter to the country without panic, without yelling, and with a healthy dose of humor.
We don't take ourselves too seriously, but we do take the truth seriously.
So if you're into common sense, sanity, and some occasional sass,
you're our kind of people.
Catch new episodes of Normally every Tuesday and Thursday
on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen.
Many people have asked me what my position is on abortion and abortion rights. My view is now that we have abortion where everybody wanted it from a legal standpoint, the states will determine by vote or legislation or perhaps both, and whatever they decide must be the law of the land. In this case, the law of the state.
Fine. Everybody has an opinion about Trump putting out his abortion opinion today. I certainly have many of my own, but I want to hear from Terry and Brianna first. Joining me now, Terry Schilling, president of the American Principles Project, and Brianna Lyman, of course, of the Federalist. I love the freaking Federalist. Okay, Terry, I'll give it to you first, and I'll hand it over to Brianna once you're done, or she can just take it from there. You saw the video from Trump. Were you standing and cheering? Were you bashing your head off the desk? How do you react?
Well, let's start with the good. The good is that he starts off with a very pro-life message, takes a victory lap for getting Roe v. Wade overturned. And then also, this is the most important part, is he punches Democrats right in the teeth by going after them for abortion extremism. Now, what's disappointing, Jesse, is I think a lot of people in the pro-life movement were expecting him to come out in support of some gestational limit. And I use that word very specifically, limit. We do not support a ban. We support limiting abortion until the 15th week when the baby can feel pain. And we give some exceptions for that in rape, incest, and life of the mother. That would have been, I think, the smart political play. It would have allowed him to go on offense and actually distance himself from any of the more radical and extreme versions of abortion limits in the state level. But right now, we've got our pro-life president. We've got to get him over the finish line. But there's still a long way to go. We can still get a more solid commitment out of him down the road.
Yeah,
Terry, Brianna, interesting. You bashing head or cheering?
I think I'm neither right now. I think that Donald Trump is in between a rock and a hard place because Republicans have never had a unified message on abortion. You have people who say there should be no abortions, people who say 6 weeks, and those who say 12 to 15. Democrats have been able to exploit this because they are unified. They know that they want a minimum of 12 weeks, if not some people want 9 months, right? But they can all gather around and coalesce around the central idea is that abortion should be legal. And so they've been able to say, well, we're going to define the Republicans' message for them if they're not willing to do so. And since Donald Trump did not come out and specify a limit, I think they're going to, again, exploit that. That being said, I don't think abortion is the winning issue Democrats hope it will be. So Politico, they did a great analysis actually a few weeks ago, and they looked at five states who had abortion referendums on their ballots. And yes, those voters in those states kept abortion, but the voter turnout, it wasn't driven because Democrats, you know, turned out in large swaths. It was actually driven by Republicans. And what they found was that Republicans went out, they voted to keep abortion, but then they voted down ballot Republican. And so I think come November, we're gonna see this in Florida and we're gonna see it in other states. You will have Republicans, if they have the opportunity to split their decision on abortion from their decision on a candidate, Republicans will do well.
Okay, Brianna, I guess I'll leave it with you before I go to Terry with this one, because it's a very fair point. Me personally, we'll set aside Trump for the moment. Me personally, how am I supposed to get excited about a country that may choose Republicans because eggs are too expensive, but they also love abortion? Am I supposed to be excited that we'll elect Republicans who also love abortion?
Yeah, and that's a great conflict that I think a lot of Republicans face. But unfortunately, if Republicans are not able to meet in the middle, right, that's how these elections work. You have to appeal to the average voter. The average voter just tends to statistically show that they support abortion to some extent. Now, it's a moral issue. Of course, abortion is wrong morally. But unfortunately, we don't live in a moral country anymore, right? We live in a political society that they want to make abortion legal up to 9 months. And so if that's the case, you have to play the playing field. And that includes, you know, ending abortion at 8 weeks, right? Setting a limit, like Terry said.
Terry, how am I supposed to feel that, because look, she brings up a great point, and everyone who brings up this point is 100% correct. Republicans nationally, they may be able to win, but on this issue, it probably does hurt us. But what's that say about us as a country, Terry?
Well, I think it really sucks, Jesse, because, you know, this election, if we don't reelect Donald Trump, our choices are very slim in terms of pro-life gains in the future. I mean, we'll be talking about just avoiding jail time. And we have to face the fact that we are up against an entire political party that wants to throw MAGA Republicans in jail. They don't want to just allow you to exist and have your talking points and tweets online. They want to come for you. I mean, they're locking up old grandmas right now that were just praying in the Capitol. So this is coming at a very unfortunate time where Republicans don't really have a lot of options. But the whole point of winning elections is to win on policy. And so, listen, I think we need to pump the brakes on criticizing Trump and just continue to work with him and help him see the opportunity of a 15-week limit to where he can use that to go on offense and also use it to moderate against some of the more extreme versions in the states.
All right, let's move on and talk about the check. Brianna, you wrote a piece about a grandma going to the clink for cruising around the Capitol for 10 minutes. Who is this dangerous criminal taken down by our heroic justice system?
Yeah, iconic, honestly. Well, we have people robbing, punching girls in the streets of New York City. A 70-something-year-old great-grandmother, actually, not just a grandma, a great-grandma, might end up in jail. Apparently, she'll have to pay a hefty fine because she walked into the Capitol for less than 12 minutes. She's seen on video. She prays. She speaks to a Capitol police officer, and she leaves. And the way she described it, essentially, was that once she realized what was happening, she decided, you know what? I'm going to head out peacefully. The same doors that she walked in through, she exited through. And it's really concerning, Jesse, because this is a woman who pays her tax dollars to fund the Capitol building. The Capitol building is standing. It has lights on because of people like her. And no one is condoning the violence that took place on January 6th. But when you have Capitol police officers seen on video essentially allowing people in, it sends a signal, okay, well, this is permitted, right? If they're not saying get out right now and they're opening the doors for them and they're, you know, kind of directing them, that is misleading to these individuals. And to throw someone like her, who's clearly not a threat, into jail speaks volumes of where the Biden Department of Justice has their priorities, right? Because we have seen people who've burned down or tried to throw Molotov cocktails when the abortion debate was happening. They get off scot-free, but people like her don't.
Terry, how seriously do we think the Trump administration, if we actually get one, how seriously do we think we're going to take this politicization, if we're going to put it that way, to put it in a very nice way, of the entire legal system of the United States of America? I don't know how we can continue with the DOJ, FBI like this, but what can Trump do about it? There was nothing done last time.
Well, I think it all starts with getting a new attorney general in place. My favorite pick for that would be obviously Mike Davis, who's been phenomenal across the board on all this stuff. But listen, I don't think anyone will take correcting our justice system more seriously than the guy that has, 97 trumped up charges. Donald Trump knows that he has to fix this justice system, this injustice system that's going after political opponents more than anyone does, right? He is going to take this seriously because he has to if he wants to ever have freedom. If he ever wants to have a good life for his own children and grandchildren, which I think he does, he will take this very seriously. And I think a great person to start with at the Department of Justice would be Mike Davis.
99% of Americans are not aware that the women's basketball tournament is going on right now, but it is. And South Carolina's head coach Don Staley had this to say about trannies in women's sports.
One of the major issues facing women's sports right now is the debate, discussion topic about the inclusion of transgender athletes, biological males, in women's sports. I was wondering if you would tell me your position on that issue.
I'm under the opinion of If you're a woman, you should play. If you consider yourself a woman or and you want to play sports or vice versa, you should be able to play. That's my opinion. You want me to go deeper?
Do you think transgender women should be able to participate?
That's your question you want basketball. Me to ask. I mean, you want to ask, so I'll give you that. Yes. Yes.
Okay. Brianna, I'm not totally convinced we're winning this trannies and women's sports thing because we keep yelling, but it keeps moving forward.
Yeah, Republicans are just simply not doing enough, especially at the state level. And, you know, women, I assume both of you guys would not know what this feels like, but we are being reduced down to nothing but caricatures, right? We have men who dress up and they put on makeup and they put on a dress or a bra and they say that they feel like a woman. And then people actually have decided to tell women that after, you know, years, dozens of years, centuries, really, of forcing us to essentially acquiesce to whatever a man has to tell us, right? A man says, you can't go to work, you don't go to work, back in the early 1900s. We finally get all these rights and these freedoms, and now we're being told that men are going to tell us how to be a woman and that we have to actually be okay with them teaching us how to be a real woman. And when it comes to women in sports, she looked reluctant to answer that question. I think she was worried more so about the political backlash rather than what her actual beliefs were, because that is not a woman who believes she's steadfast in her opinion. I would have answered that immediately. Either way, no matter what side you're on, you answer that immediately. She didn't.
I don't know why you're so sure I've never worn a dress. I might put on a dress as soon as we're done here. I bet Terry wears dresses all the time. Terry, I bet you look great in a light blue.
Jesse, listen, I think that video reminded me of a terrorist hostage video, right? I mean, I'd love to see the other side of that room to see if there were any guns pointed at that poor lady. But that is the thing that the left has, is they have captured all of our elite institutions and they have people scared to death of losing their job and losing their livelihood if they just say the wrong thing here. Well, let's not forget that we've gotten 24 states to protect girls' sports, gotten 23 states now to protect kids from these gender mutilation surgeries. The momentum at the state level is high. Donald Trump has been exceptional on this issue, been very clear about what he wants to do and what he's going to do as president to protect our girls and their sports and our kids from these procedures. So, you know, I think we're going to win this thing, but we got to start sending people to jail and start suing the heck out of them because they're really endangering a lot of people.
Terry, Brianna, appreciate you both. All right. We have more culture war talk. This whole racism. Remember that? What's that term they love? Started with an S. Remember that term? Systemic racism. Remember that? Let's talk about what systemic racism is and isn't. And is there any of it here in America before we talk about that? Speaking of systemic problems, there's a systemic problem in the timeshare industry. There really genuinely is. It's a systemic problem. What is that problem? Well, it's become just how they do business. They get people sign up for these timeshares, and they never tell you when you're signing up. But you're signed up for life, and people don't know it. You think, well, when I'm done, I can get out. But they tell you, no, annual fees, pay them every single year. Special assessments, pay up. And then they doubled the annual fees on you, didn't they? But you're not stuck for life. You used to be, but now we have Lone Star Transfer. Lone Star Transfer is the family business that will legally and permanently get you out of your timeshare. You ready for that? Be free. Set yourself free. Go. Call them, 844-310-2646. They guarantee it. They guarantee it in writing. Go be free. We'll be back.
Hey there, I'm Mary Catherine Hamm.
And I'm Carol Markowitz. We've been in political media for a long time.
Long enough to know that it's gotten, well, a little insane.
That's why we started Normally, a podcast for people who are over the hysteria and just want clarity.
We talk about the issues that actually matter to the country without panic, without yelling, and with a healthy dose of humor.
We don't take ourselves too seriously, but we do take the truth seriously.
So if you're into common sense, sanity, and some occasional sass,
you're our kind of people.
Catch new episodes of Normally every Tuesday and Thursday
on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen.
I think the Republican Party is sort of this extremist, anti-science, nativist, you know, embracing white supremacist, insurrectionist party at this point.
White nationalists, anarchists, whatever in this country that are using mask mandates and a public health crisis to sort of wage chaos.
Domestic terrorism from white supremacists is the most lethal terrorist threat in the homeland.
What I know is the law, and what I know is what white people are willing to do to defend white supremacy.
Being Hispanic or being black does not, or being anything, does not make you immune from being racist, from being radicalized, from being a white supremacist.
Republicans have used the special counsel's report to further their longstanding efforts to re-elect the former white supremacist in chief, Donald Trump.
Man, that sounds like a pretty scary problem. This white supremacy, we better tackle that. Joining me now, Jeremy Carl, author of the book, The Unprotected Class. Jeremy, you know, one of those terms that's been just thrown around so much in recent years is systemic racism. Systemic racism. Is there systemic racism around this country? And if there is, against whom?
Well, Jesse, I think you've asked just the right question. There is some systemic racism going on, but the victim group in that kind of formula is the opposite of what you just heard on that nice pre-roll. It is really white people who are disproportionately the victim of that type of systemic racism. And you see that everywhere from job applications to universities, to the way Hollywood talks about things, to even healthcare. You pretty much name the area. And that's sort of what I tried to outline in this new book, The Unprotected Class, that'll be out and is available for pre-ordering now, but it'll be out on the 23rd of April.
You see it everywhere once you see it. Once you see it, you can't unsee it, how all the guns seem to be aimed at white people now. It's just very, very common. You can trash them, badmouth them, call them names, freeze them out of jobs. You can be open about that. And it's not just permitted, it's encouraged in this country. What's behind it? Why?
Yeah, well, Jesse, that's a great question. And I think we should always ask that. I mean, I'm enough of a kind of recovering academic that I think you need to be very systemic in terms of how you look at these sorts of issues. There is a famous sociologist of ages past, a guy named C. Wright Mills, who talked about legitimating ideologies. And that's just a fancy way of saying that regimes of all sorts of types kind of create ideologies to justify the things that they want to do. Well, I think ultimately what is really driving this is that there are a bunch of groups that see that white people in America have a lot of resources of various types that they've accumulated, understandably, because this has been the dominant group numerically in the United States from kind of pretty much time immemorial. And they want those resources. But in the kind of common American context today, you can't just say, well, I'm taking your stuff because I want it. That doesn't really work that well, except for maybe some squatters in New York City. But so you need an ideology around that. You need an ideology that says, I am taking this from you because you owe me, because you're oppressive, because you have been historically racist, because this system is systemically racist against me, et cetera, et cetera. You need to kind of develop all that. And these ideologies don't, again, they don't spring fully armored like Athena from Zeus's head, ready for battle. There's a reason, and they've been gestating for a while. They've been moving around for a while. To do that, we need that type of ideology. And so because people want those resources that a lot of white people, and certainly not all white people, but a lot of white people have, they develop this ideology of white supremacy in order to justify claiming them.
Then why are the people who push this at the top, I'm not talking about the street animals at the bottom, the climate change nutters and the Antifas and Black Lives Matters, let's set the street animals aside. The people at the top pushing this are all white. It's everybody from Bill Gates to Bezos to Biden to all these people. They're whiter than you and me combined. What's the deal?
So that you've hit on two really important points in my book in just that brief comment. The first is that in any time you have these sorts of ideologies, you have what's called and from 1984 here, an inner party and an outer party. So the inner party kind of, that's the Bill Gateses of the world, to a degree, and certainly even people a little bit out from him. They're the people who are a little more sophisticated actors. They understand exactly what they're doing, even if they sometimes don't want to admit it to themselves because it may not make them feel good about themselves. But they kind of understand. That's a much smaller number of actors. Then there's the much bigger group, and that's what's called, you just called them the street animals. It's a fair enough label. But I think it's the much broader group of people. Not even all those people are out in the streets, but it's a group of people who are sort of brainwashed by that inner party, by the media, et cetera, to think, hey, you know, I'm just fighting for social justice. I'm fighting for the American way, freedom. They don't even necessarily realize that what they're ultimately doing is participating in this campaign of expropriation. So that's the first thing, this key distinction between an inner and an outer party. The second key point that I think you just touched on there is a lot of these people are whiter than you and I. And I think for them, there are two different things going on with these groups. There are some that are the Bill Gateses of the world. And for them to be anti-white is essentially a status symbol. It's a power symbol. Bill Gates, you could discriminate against him from here to eternity. It wouldn't make any difference to him, because he's so wealthy, he's so powerful, like you want to marginalize him for being white, it doesn't even matter to him. It's a way of saying for people like Bill Gates, and again, even people well down the rung of the ladder from Bill Gates, but still very influential and powerful people, I'm more influential, I'm more powerful than you, I don't need to be treated equally to succeed in this system. That's one group. Then I think we also have a second group in society, and these guys, I've got to be honest, we haven't totally figured out what's going on, but we can look at the research and see that it's going on, which is that white liberals, and this is exclusive to white liberals, it is not true when you survey any other group, it's not true of Black liberals, it's not true of Hispanic liberals, it's not true of any other race, of any other ideology, but white liberals consistently display self-hatred, hatred for white people. They rate white people lower on pretty much every kind of metric that you could imagine. This is extraordinarily unusual. I'm not aware of any other country or any other ideological group where this has ever existed for. And so there's almost some sort of brainwashing, self-brainwashing going on for some members of this group, you feel like. And it may be connected to the fact that when you also look at the research, white self-reported white liberals have much, much higher rates of mental illness. So you have a bunch of bright, very motivated, mentally ill people who hate themselves and people like them. And you add them to the Bill Gates, and then you add them, because I'm not letting minorities off the hook here, you add them to some bad actors among minority political leaders who just want, you know, power for their own group, and you've got a very toxic brew.
Man alive. That's so true. All right, speaking of the minority portion of this, the civil rights movement. The civil rights movement got taken over, poisoned, and politicized, and it's whatever it is today, it doesn't look like it used to look. When did the civil rights movement go from please don't treat Black people like crap to kill whitey?
Yeah, I mean, that's another great question, Jesse. And I think there are some who kind of argue, well, the chalice was poisoned from the moment we drank it. It just took a longer time to get there. And there are some who argue that this was really a transformation. I don't see it as particularly useful to relitigate the 1964 Civil Rights Act. I think it responded to some very real problems in our society. And you can kind of argue, well, maybe it did it in maybe not the best way. But I mean, there were real things that it was addressing. I think the thing to step back and say is we are now in 2024, as far away from that time as they were from the Wright brothers. And so there's just a lot of water under the bridge since then. We have a very different set of problems facing our society. We're not faced with the problem of like, hey, nobody's gonna be allowed to sit at some lunch counter or drink from a water fountain or whatever have you. What we instead have the problem is are a number of really bogus discrimination suits. We have problems of so-called disparate impact. We have so-called, we have affirmative action, which the court has just addressed in universities very helpfully, but it's not really clear as to whether that's going to apply to employment and other things. So we've got all this reverse discrimination. I don't think there was any one inflection point you could point to. I think it's more that just when you give what some people might call the administrative state or the deep state when you kind of give them a little bit of rope, they'll hang you with it. And so these guys were all radical leftists. They were in the bureaucracy, and they took the civil rights movement, and they took a lot of very legitimate things that they wanted to accomplish, and instead they just kind of ran away, and over year after year began putting more and more rules on this that effectively made it an anti-white movement that sort of went unchallenged. And it's actually very interesting. When you go back and you read some of the congressional debate that was going on in 1964 in the civil rights movement, there was discussion of where they would say, oh no, you know, we'd never do quotas. Clearly that is absolutely disallowed. Or what became disparate impact law in the Supreme Court, disparate impact, which means if basically every race doesn't effectively wind up equal on some measure, then it's presumptively illegal. All this stuff, they said, oh, it can't happen. It won't happen. We're not going to do that in the law. And then they passed it, and the deep state eventually put it all in anyway. So I think that's kind of, it's just been a death of a thousand cuts.
Yeah, as they always do. All right, Jeremy, real quick to wrap this up, what can people do to fight back against this?
Yeah, well, I think there's a few things, Jesse. I mean, firstly, I hope people buy my book, read it, inform themselves. I kind of talk about how this goes on, not just in one area, but in a variety of different areas. It's everything from Hollywood to crime to healthcare, et cetera, the military. So I hope people buy The Unprotected Class, inform themselves about it, share it with people. At a practical policy level, here's some things I think we can do. One is, I think we need to fundamentally kind of reimagine what civil rights law should look like. That's going to be an absolute war with the left, but I think as long as we have the current very corrupted civil rights regime, we're not going to make a lot of progress in terms of addressing these problems. Secondly, I think we need to get control of the border. A lot of this is due to an uncontrolled change in demographics. When we have, before the 1965 Hart-Celler bill, this was a much less diverse country, also an easier country to govern because we had more of a unified view of what things should look like in this country. Now we're just a mess. We've got people here illegally. Until you get control of the border, and I would argue for going to net zero immigration in addition to massive deportation of illegals, but until you do that, it's very hard to get control of any of these problems. So I think that's a piece of it. I think we've got to do aggressive lawfare. Here I would really compliment my friends at America First Legal. That is Stephen Miller's group. I think it's one of the most effective groups, if not the most effective, that's come out of the Trump administration. They have been doing things to basically, they're like blatantly illegal policies that corporations, that universities have been doing in plain sight. And really nobody was challenging them on it until very recently. So America First Legal has been suing a lot of these people. They're not the only group that's done that, but I think they've been the most effective. We need to be doing that 100x. We need to be going back. Again, I know you're an ex-military guy. We need to borrow the Cold War military concept of mutually assured destruction and let the left know that if they come at us, we are going to come back at them 100 times more painfully. It's going to be really bad for them. And in fact, maybe what we should do is get back to a vision of America where people are treated equally and respectfully, regardless of their race, and we're not advantaging or disadvantaging somebody on the basis of race.
Jeremy, I appreciate it, brother. The book is The Unprotected Class. All right, we have light in the mood. You ready to talk women's basketball? Stop. You ready to talk women's basketball? We will. Next.
Hey there, I'm Mary Catherine Hamm.
And I'm Carol Markowitz. We've been in political media for a long time.
Long enough to know that it's gotten, well, a little insane.
That's why we started Normally, a podcast for people who are over the hysteria and just want clarity.
We talk about the issues that actually matter to the country without panic, without yelling, and with a healthy dose of humor.
We don't take ourselves too seriously, but we do take the truth seriously.
So if you're into common sense, sanity, and some occasional sass,
you're our kind of people.
Catch new episodes of Normally every Tuesday and Thursday
on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen.
All right, it's time to lighten the mood, and I know it's NCAA tournament time, and let's just remember to check in with the experts when we're talking about our brackets.
Do you know, okay, a bit of a history lesson. Do you know that women were not, the women's teams were not allowed to have brackets until 2022? Think about that and what that talk about progress, you know, better late than never, but progress and what that has done. Because, of course, when, you know, I had a bracket, it's not broken completely, but I won't talk about my bracket. But you know what, just how we love March Madness, and even just now allowing the women to have brackets and what that does to encourage people to talk more about the women's teams, to watch them. Now they're being covered, you know, and this is the reality. People used to say, oh, women's sports, who's interested? Well, if you can't see it, you won't be. But when you see it, you realize, oh,
I'll see you tomorrow.
You want smart political talk without the meltdowns? We got you.
And I'm Carol Markowitz.
And I'm Mary Catherine Hamm. We've been around the block in media, and we're doing things differently.
Normally is about real conversations. Thoughtful, try to be funny, grounded, and no panic.
We'll keep you informed and entertained without ruining your day.
Join us every Tuesday and Thursday.
Normally, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is an iHeart Podcast.